podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Jonathan Pearce.
The mad side of genius.
Terry Alderton. The Football Friendly.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to JP and T, The Football Friendly. How are you, Mr. Terry Alderton?
Very good, very good. A bit tired. I was out last night spitting at the moon, but I didn't hit it. Just kept coming back at me, going, I thought it was nearer. Anyway, how are you?
I'm all right. I was doing the PSG game last night against... against Marseille. You were terrible. It's called the Le Classique. It's the biggest game in French football. And PSG won it 4-0. Marseille barely turned up. But the big thing is that Mbappe turned his ankle. And they let him play on for another 23 minutes, which was a bit strange. They took him off. I don't think they'll play him against the bottom club, Clermont Foot, at the weekend. But the big ramification, will he play against Newcastle in the Champions League? Now, do Newcastle fans want him to play? Do Newcastle fans want him to play at St James's Park so they can see the best in the world? Because he is the best in the world. Or do they think, no, hang on a minute, we'd rather he's not in that side so we can win the game? It's an interesting one, isn't it? But, I saw a dreadful game, Palace against Fulham on Saturday. And, of course, I was Champions League in... the previous week. And I went to Brighton on Thursday with my eldest and saw them play woefully against AEK Athens. And then I went yesterday again to see them for an hour play much better in the second half against Bournemouth. So I've been busy, busy, B.
You are football, 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 and I've just been moon spitting. I tell you what, down on that coast there, right, there's another team down there that used to be in the Premier League, right? And it now looks like it might be dropping out the Championship. And our guest... I can see him. He's looking at me as a guy. What a welcome. Thank you. He's a very good friend of mine. He's a brilliant comedian. And our younger viewers, which we haven't got, or listeners, should I say, might remember him when he was doing a lot of kids' telly. But but if you're down there on the South Coast, he's on Radio Solent. He's been all over the place. It's the wonderful, lovely. Please welcome, and I'll introduce to you, Jonathan Pearce, Mr. Tom Deacon. How are you, Tom?
How are you, Tom?
I'm very well. What an introduction.
Yes, it was a long one.
No, it was a long one, and it got nicer as you continued. you did mention it has been a woeful time on the South Coast as a Southampton fan. But hey, you know, we might not get relegated. So, you know, there's always hope.
Well, as it could be worse, the other South, because people always think when I talk to a cab driver and they go, who do you support? And I say Southend, and they carry on about Southampton to me. And they go, no, Southend. So it won't be as bad as that, pal. Anyway.
But, interestingly enough, I mean, JP talking about football, 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 that is what it is at the moment. And being a Southampton fan, knowing how well the team in blue just down the road are doing, top of League One, that is quite exciting. As long as Southampton don't get relegated and Portsmouth get promoted, that a proper South Coast derby is going to happen again. For years, it's been Bournemouth fans trying to jump on that bandwagon, and Brighton doesn't really count; they're too good. There is optimism. And there's reasons to be hopeful and excited.
And of course, Exeter not even worth worrying about, right? And
that's too far down the coast. Oddly enough, I used Yeovil. To live. At university, I lived just around the corner from Exeter's a beautiful, resplendent football ground, but never went. But that's one of my, St James's Park, I believe.
Yes, correct. I did a panto down there once in Exmouth. I got bed bugs, everything. It was a nightmare. It was horrendous. Honestly, bad digs. I was wishy-washy. Hello, kids. Me walking around with a woman in a big dress, of course, with a man dressed up, which in this day and age. Can we have dames anymore? Oh, that's going to be interesting at Christmas now, isn't it, with the world? Anyway, let's not get on to that.
You walking around dressed as a woman, as a dame?
No, I wasn't. I was...
A dame with a Y in it, Terry. Dame with a Y in it.
I will never play the dame. Get it? Yeah. That's with Nell and I. Anyway, but doesn't matter.
Yeah. There'd be no real sort of comedy. There's more like, well, good for them. It's a kind of attitude, you know, at the panto. Not like, oh, I'm up for the joke. I get it. We're acknowledging the fact it's not, but it is. But now it'd be like, yeah, fair play. Congratulations. Coming out and doing a great job. Well done them.
Yeah, well done them. And look at the makeup. And all that new generation, panto generation, is just going to be thinking it's... Yeah, well, that's good for him.
I had one in Europe last week. I did for the what's called the World Feed. It goes out to the English speaking countries of the world. I did Red Star Belgrade.
Oh, you've ripped Tuesday. It back to football, haven't you? I've just realised what you've done. We've gone on about dames. You've got no. This is a football podcast. Go on.
Yeah, but because that's officially sort of through UEFA, that's done. We have to call them Sven Zvezda. not Red Star Belgrade. In the same way, we have to say Czechia now, not the Czech Republic. So, it's a bit of a mouthful, Sverdlovsk Zvezda. And, they took the lead against Manchester City. They lost in the end. Man City deserved to win. It was a good game. But it's interesting, isn't it, how the world changes and you have to do these things now. But anyway, I've got a great story about Southampton. When I was at Bristol City and I broke my leg, we went down to the Dell, which is one of my favourite football grounds because it was unique. The stand behind the goal to the right-hand side from the tunnel side sort of stepped down, didn't it? And it was unique, lovely little ground. And anyway, I was on crutches. It was March 1975. I broke my leg quite badly and went down on the first team bus, worked with my dad, videoing the game for the video analysis. People who listen to the podcast know what we did. And then went in the dressing room afterwards and the players came out. And behind the main stand at the Dell, there was a players' bar. You had to go up a flight of iron steps to get to this players' bar. And I'm stood at the bottom of the steps on my crutch. I couldn't get up. First team boys went in to have a pint. Southampton boys went in for a pint. And big Laurie McManamy came out and he said he recognised me from... he must have seen me play as a young kid or something. I don't know. Anyway, and he said, what are you waiting for, son? So I said, I'm from Bristol City and I'm trying to get up to the players' bar, but I can't manage the steps. You wait there, son. And then he sent down two first team. I think one was Jim Steele, I seem to remember, and another one. And they carried me up into the players' bar so that I could be there. And I thought, that is Laurie McManamy all over and Southampton Football Club as it was at that time all over. You know, it was such a welcoming place. And it was lovely. And another one, quick one for you, Tom. When we were doing Capital Gold and Bobby Moore was working with me, the commentary box at the Dell was a glassed-in affair. It was very narrow and sort of one strip of seats at the back of the stand. Anyway, so the game's finished. Can't remember who it was. The game's finished and then we went into the phone-in. So we're still there about 6:45 doing the phone-in. And all of a sudden, all these firemen started to arrive into the stand. And all this sort of dry ice smoke started to appear from everywhere. We've carried on going. We think this is a bit of a giggle, carried on going. And then they started putting mannequins in the seats. And, what's going on here? Anyway, so we carried on talking to, Billy from Ballam, answering questions about West Ham that day, wherever it was. And then the firemen's come knocking on the boys. You've got to get out. You've got to get out, son. This is a fire drill. You've got to get out. Get out. Come on, get out. We carried on talking. No, you've got to leave. I'm talking to you. You've got to leave. So Bobby Moore turned around and said, how long did this fire drill start? How long has it been going? 18 minutes now. And Bobby Moore said, how long would it have taken for us to die in the fire? And he went, 2 minutes. Well, consider us bloody dead. Piss off and let's carry on with the phone in. And the blokes looked at him, quite rightly enraged, by the way, ladies and gentlemen. We shouldn't have taken that attitude. But he's looked at him and saw Bobby Moore, our World Cup winning captain of 1966. Quite right, Mr. Moore. Quite right, Mr. Moore. I consider you dead. Carry on. And disappear.
Yeah. And I reckon it would have been different words to bloody and stuff. But what's appropriate, of course, with our day and age when people are leaving, probably Man City have this all the time, is there a fire drill? Is there a fire drill? Yeah, that one. talking about Laurie McManamy, he's one of the nicest people I've ever met in football. He's an absolutely... I've worked with him as well. And I could never take my eye off his eye. He's got a jangly eye. He's got it's like his pupil has fallen down in the bottom of his eye there. Do you remember when you were a kid and you had those little faces with the ball bearing in and you had to try and get the ball bearing into the centre spot to win, the two eyes. He's got an eye like that. I swear to you, it sounds terrible, but he had a... And the other thing I used to love about Laurie as well, which was brilliant, I remember going up to Laurie and said, Laurie, good to see you, blah, blah, blah. I said, could you do me a photograph... a signature for the boy? And he went, yeah, and he pulled out a photograph of him with the FA Cup from about, I don't know what it would have been, 1976. 76, all his hair's thick and long and... What a sweet man. Carried him around with him.
Yeah, he's an absolute legend. So working for the club and working for the Saints Foundation, the charity of Southampton, he would turn up to the dinners with that laminated picture ready to sign. Yeah, I know the one. And what's worse, I've never done a charity auction, but he was sat in the front row and he leant forward. We thought we'd finished the auction. He passes it forward to me and I'm like, what do you want me to do? You know, he's just like, sell it. So I then have to, in a big room, Sir Laurie McMenemy, trying to shift it. But that's the heart of gold. And he also had his autobiography that came out, which is a fantastic read, and understanding what his whole mantra is and about football teams and how they're galvanised. And little mind games of the FA Cup that season. The semi-final was at Stamford Bridge against Crystal Palace. And he told the coach driver, we need to be the first in. It's a mind game. So they raced. So he actually got into Stamford Bridge to choose which changing room they went in. It's loads of little fascinating things like that. But I said to him, I'm going to buy your book. And next time I see you, I'll get it signed. And I did, bumped into him again, had the book. And he turned to his wife. It was incredible as well. And he turned to her just without a beat. He says, oh, now we know who bought the other one. And it's just a lovely, like what a bloke, And he's definitely a Southampton legend. And to hear stories like that just make you love football a bit more.
Which were you? I mean, you're far too young to remember Ted Bates, who was his predecessor. Laurie was his assistant. Ted Bates is a wonderful Southampton man. Are you immersed in that sort of, you know, Ted Bates, the Ron Davis sort of legend, and indeed that you wouldn't have been born, would you?
I was 86, so I was born then. So the Dell was my first experience of football, going to watch Lettice, a.k.a. Le God, on that hallowed turf of the Dell, the fortress that it was. And, you know, mistakenly not understanding why they were calling the referee a waiter. things like that. The Dell was incredible. But you know, Laurie was still prominent, I think, to Southampton fans then with his involvement in the club. But no, the Ted Bates era, you just have to look up on Wikipedia and just see how incredible he was for the club. And then moving to St Mary's and, yeah, and all that's gone on since then. But yeah, the Dell was iconic. And also, one player that played for us, which I love this story, Neil Razor Ruddock, a fascinating fella. Very interesting indeed. He's got many a story that some aren't for public broadcast. He said to me once, he said, oh, guess how many Man of the Matches I got? I was like, oh, what do you mean, Neil? And he was like, well, guess how many mallets I've got in my shed, because it was Draper Tools that were the sponsor.
Oh, and yeah, Draper Tools.
And I had to guess how many mallets that they gave to the man of the match, the player of the game. I don't know, eight? He went, three. I've got three in my shed. So, like, it's a fascinating play. They used to give out. So, yeah, amazing, many times.
So they used to give out, you know, when you look at the UEFA Player of the Season and FIFA Player of the Season, and they get £100,000 watches or whatever as a prize, and, you know, bangles and jewellery and all that. They used to give out a mallet.
And a Neil mallet. Razor Ruddock. Yeah, look, anyone listening, if you need a mallet, Neil Razor Ruddock has three in his shed from Man of the Match performances at Southampton.
I'll tell you what, Tom, if I open my door late at night and Neil Razor Ruddock is stood outside the door with a mallet in his hand, the first thing I'm going to do is call the old Bill and run very quickly.
But you know what?
Go on.
Sorry. No, I was just going to say, of that era, what I understand about football and the professionalism that is now, and how supposedly players, you know, get away with murder nowadays, and they haven't got that kind of team ethos, and they don't stick their neck on the line, and all the rest of it that older players and older generation will say. But it seemed like it was an absolute jolly on the South Coast for a lot of players that came to Southampton. We had the likes of, you know, Chris Wood, who came, the goalkeeper, didn't play much. Barry Venison, you know, like John Beresford, all ex-England internationals that came to the South Coast knowing that, hey, we're not a European side, but we're there to just wind down the career. And for a little while, that changed the whole mantra of Southampton. But it was, we did have lots of players that were on their sort of last legs at Southampton and enjoyed a night out.
Well, that was a flip side when you went to St Mary's, because you became the Liverpool B team, didn't you? I mean, they've just given out players. Oh, yeah, he's brilliant. We'll give him away. What was the difference between the two grounds, in your opinion? You know, because everyone said once you left the Dell, you know, 15,000, as Jonathan said, packed to every inch of that ground.
I think, I mean, Jonathan will, you know, agree. I think that the Dell was so, not because it was 15,000, you know, the St Mary's has got 32,000, but the fact that you were so close to the touchline, how intimidating that could be. And it felt bigger. The Dell felt, you know, like atmospheric, and it did feel like a bit of a lion's den at times. And we could also turn up and play some absolute crap football. So you never knew what you were going to get at the Dell. Whereas you go to St Mary's, further away from the pitch, it's the classic, that's how football stadiums are nowadays. Mm. And then you look at, you know, like Luton. That's, it's just such full of character, so close to the touchline with the players. I think that gave Southampton an edge.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, though, Tom. When I was little, my you know, we're Bristol City through and through, and my dad worked for the club, as I said. But occasionally he'd say, right, we'll go somewhere. Like, he took me to Portsmouth to hear the Pompey Chimes, just to hear the Pompey Chimes. He took me to Charlton just to see the South Bank stand, because it was so enormous. And we go to a game, he paid to see games just to see a player. And, you know, I'd have paid money to go and see Matthew Letizia at Southampton, because when you went to the Dell, you knew you were almost certain to get a moment of magic. One of the best players,
yeah, definitely.
You know, great. I've ever seen great. Play. He was just super. I mean, you know, would he be your all time hero? But listen, how about Beattie? How about Ricky Lambert? You know, these. How about Marianne Pahars? Virtually kept him up and 1 year.
All the these Latvian players, Michael Owen, yeah. The Latvian Michael Owen.
The Latvian Michael Owen, yeah. It's funny, isn't it? They always come up with you know, the Georgie Hadji was the Maradona of the Carpathians. He'll come up with it. who's your favourite of all time?
Well, it has to be, you know, we go in there as a small kid and go in and seeing Le God. Like, who's Le God? Who is this player? But he was a magician. Sometimes if I'm still, you know, you have a bad moment in life, put on the 100 greatest Matt Letiz goals in the Premier League, and you just, I just feel good about the world again. An incredible player, did so much for Southampton, definitely a footballing idol. So when I met him and got to chat to him, you've got so many goals in the back of your head. You're like, I want to ask him about that, but I don't want to ask him the obvious questions that everybody asks. So, but yeah, know him quite well now, and that's kind of like, he's still that magician that was on the pitch. But we've had a lot of iconic good players for Southampton. Like Jay Rodriguez was amazing. You mentioned Ricky Lambert, Franny Bonali. You know, the consistency of that man as our left back. You know, some of the goalkeepers, Antti Niemi, what a character. Artur Boric, what a mentalist. Like, genuinely bonkers. So we've got such good characters of players over the years. But yeah, for me, growing up, Matt Letiz was Le God.
You mentioned Franny Bonali, right? My in-laws used to put up young Crystal Palace players, you know. They used to board at my in-laws, and one of them was called Andrew Martin. And he made his reserve debut for the Palace against Southampton at Wimbledon's old ground, Plough Lane. And 2 minutes into the game, he tried to nutmeg, well, he did nutmeg Franny Bonali, who for some reason was playing for Southampton reserves, must have been coming back from injury in those days when you did have reserve teams like this. Anyways, nutmeg Franny Bonali, and everyone in the crowd's gone. And we were all there, you know, everyone was there to watch him because he was little Andrew and everything like that. He's nutmeg Franny Bonali, and everyone's gone, oh no, oh no. And we're all doing it, oh no, because we knew what was going to happen. And 2 minutes later, Andrew Martin was stretchered from the field.
I don't. If just a little bit of like homework. I'm giving Terry Alderton and Jonathan Pearce homework. But watch Franny Bonali take out John Fashanu and got straight red. I mean, he took off. Basically, John Fashanu took off in the air. Franny Bonali says now he wasn't proud of that, but you wouldn't mess with him. Nor would you mess with Jason Dodd, who had the most Premier League or appearances for Southampton until James Ward-Prowse took over that stat. But yeah, I mean, hard players that you wouldn't mess with. Terry Horlock, like loads of players that were renowned for, you didn't take the piss out of them.
Didn't Terry Horlock play for Portsmouth as well? Didn't he play for Portsmouth? He went to Millwall, I know that much. He was a lunatic.
Millwall legend, wasn't he? He went to Scotland and played for Rangers.
Yeah, he's absolutely great fun to watch. He was of the old days, which you mentioned just back there, which we're blessed with in the lower leagues. You were saying, Tom, you know, we get kicked up in the air. That's a great thing about the lower league football, as much as people probably, would you watch that? But there's no rolling around like you get in the Premier League. Have you noticed that since you've gone down now? I hate to say that you've gone down, but you have. Do you
Terry, don't worry. I'm fully aware.
Yeah, I've had
our pitch. You know when you've been relegated from the Premier League, our pitch is bit ropey now. Do you know what I mean? It gets ropier, but that's proper football. I've noticed it is a bit more physical now in the Championship. And I remember when I was going around the country to support Southampton when we were in League One, and I remember going to Leighton Orient. They had 2,000 fans and Saints brought 3,000. You know, your ground's too big for you. Yeah. The away days were amazing in lower league football. And actually, the one good thing about being relegated, I know I'm obviously finding silver linings, but to go around the country and see likes of Plymouth, go up to Middlesbrough, like all these clubs that we haven't played for such a long time, and an appreciation of, like Jonathan said, when his dad took him everywhere, you just want to go and have a day out and see these grounds, which have had amazing FA Cup runs or moments in their history, and appreciate it. So, yeah, I've definitely noticed that we are not physical enough in our current side to possibly be fighting for promotion at the moment.
I'll tell you what I noticed, Tom, last year when I went there. This is you come out of the tunnel, having done your pre-match interviews or whatever, turn right to go around the ground via the away end, walk around the pitch. There's a steward there, and he's very knowledgeable. And I speak to him every time I'm there. He's a lovely gent. And it was very early on last season, whether it's a Manchester United home game, might even have been, I think it might have been Chelsea, you know, when they beat Chelsea 2-1. And he just turned around to me and said, there's something wrong. I think this season we're going to go. And I went, really? Yeah, I think this season we're going to go. And that's what happened, because there was this pall of, not gloom even then, there was this uncertainty about it. There was a disconnect, something wasn't right. What happened there last season? Were they right to get rid of Hudson Tootle when they did?
You can't mention Nathan Jones at any point.
Well, I was going to come on to that. I was very subtly going to come on.
All right, come on to that. There, go back to that question. Too early.
Yeah, did he get rid of Hudson Tootle too early?
Because I remember the game, the Chelsea game. Romeo Lavia missed injury, but has kept us financially in play from him going to Chelsea. He scored, made it a 2-1 win. Thomas Tuchel, I think, was sacked a couple of days later after that result. And yes, my opinion, Ralph interviewed him many times. I think he spoke very well. My understanding is he did certain things that annoyed players, the likes of Danny Ings or Charlie Austin or players that left that didn't like his methods. But you're going to find that in any manager. But one thing that Ralph Hasenhüttl never had was the budget. He never got given all that money to choose the players he wanted for his system. It was use the youth players. So when the season started, Saints should have got rid of him before the season started, or they should have backed him. And they did neither, and then just chopped him. And then brought in Nathan Jones, who then had money to spend, or the club had bought in players, had spent more than they'd ever done in the last 6 or 7 years. And you're like, well, that doesn't work. And then they changed the game. And then you were like, okay, now we need a manager that's going to do well for us. And that's what we've got with Russell Martin. And we've spent a lot of money and it's still not working. So I think something fundamentally isn't right at Southampton. And that, I don't know how you fix that. The foundations don't seem right at the moment. And until we get that right. But yeah, I agree with you. Well, Ralph was kept on for too long and sacked too soon.
I'll tell you, Jonathan will probably have a... He's...
Just the mere mention of Ralph Hasenhüttl has
yeah,
got
he's
Jonathan.
Done him. Look, let's take a break and let Jonathan recover.
It was the mention of Nathan Jones.
Take a break.
The Football Friendly.
So Nathan Jones, then, welcome back, everyone, by the way, sorry, to JP&T, the Football Friendly. That's the first time I've ever done that. I've took that mantra there, that joy, because Jonathan's trying to reset after he drunk the tea down the wrong hole. He went down the wrong hole, love. When do you do that, though? You know what you do? You actually, my wife goes, it doesn't work, but it does work. You keep your mouth closed and breathe through your nose. You know when you go, you drink down the wrong hole, mouth closed, breathe through your nose. You learn on this show. You learn nothing. Anyway, let's go back to Nathan Jones, because he's been a topic on here, especially with Southampton. He goes back with me to the Southend United days, and of course, Jonathan knew him when he was knocking around at Brighton. I think Jonesy should have learnt his lesson when he first, you know, when he went off to Stoke the first time. That was a ridiculous thing. There must be a part of Nathan. I mean, I like Nathan. He's a lovely lad. But there must be a part of Nathan. He must be sitting in his armchair at home right at this point going, oh, looking at Luton, going, that's my team. Why did I do it, Jonathan Pearce?
I think he made basic mistakes when he first went in there. Shortest serving permanent manager in Southampton's history. You know, he went in there and he just started bigging himself up, I think. And if he did that in the dressing room when he first went in, he was a dead man walking from day one. Mm. You know, you've got players and they're like James Ward-Prowse. If he's saying things like this that's come out in the press, you know, my stats are the best in Europe. I'm the best at this. I'm the best at that. Da, 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 da. And they look and say, you've been manager of Luton, failed at Stoke, and you were caretaker at Brighton Hove Albion for 9 days. So he didn't have the pedigree to go in and do that. I know managers want to make their mark, and that's the way he chose to do it. I think it was a mistake. I then think in his press conferences and his interviews, people had an agenda then, and they milked him for that agenda, and he kept falling into the traps. Mm. And I'm sure he'll look back now and think, you know, he should have done the job differently, because he was tremendous at Luton Town. And, you know, he didn't start badly, did he, Tom? From what my memory is at Southampton, he just, you know, in the end, they had a dreadful run and he had to go. But he didn't start badly.
No, he didn't start badly. We weren't great. It was quite hard to galvanise the team. There was the World Cup break. So actually what he did have was a long period of time with the players. And I know from, you know, as fact, he gave the players 2 weeks off as soon as he arrived, or he gave them a break, which, looking back, maybe that was one of his mistakes. He didn't take the team and go, right, let's hit the ground running. He gave them a break maybe to get on board or to be liked by the players. We lost to Liverpool 3-1, but he didn't have enough time to really, you know, get in and sort things out. And I think the only best result he had was against Man City at home when we beat them 2-0 and made sure that they couldn't win 4 trophies that year. So actually, that was the best result. But a lot of it was, like you say, you didn't know what his system was. And then he would say, oh, I've done things wrong. I didn't do it my way. And you're like, well, you're the manager. Take charge of the situation. Signed Paul Anawachu from the Belgian league, this 6'8" giant. And never played a long ball to him. So you're like, well, hang on a minute. What is the system? No one believed in it. And I think, as you mentioned, that steward at the beginning of the season, we were all a bit like, what are we doing? Where are we going? What's the direction of this club? And Nathan, you just had to give him a little bit more rope. And he would say the wrong thing. I feel for him because he seems like a nice bloke. But you don't want a nice bloke when you want a manager.
I've just looked up, by the way, just to verify my assumption that he got off to a good start. League game 1, lost to Liverpool 3-1. League game 2, lost to Brighton 3-1. League game 3, lost to Fulham 2-1. League game 4, lost to Nottingham Forest 1-0. So that was that good start I was telling you about. he did have the win against Man City, didn't he, in the League Cup. Yeah. And then they went away at Everton. Everyone thought it was going to be dreamy and it never happened. So what about Russell Martin? Martin, how are you? Because I happen to think Russell Martin's a very good man. And he's learned his football as he's gone on. He's constructed a really good career with the talent he had as a player. And I think he's constructing his managerial career well as well. So I like Russell Martin.
I do as well, JP. I like him. Everything he says, it comes with a certain honesty. I think that was the problem with Nathan. He would talk a lot and you were like, what do you mean here? And Russell talks very to the point. It's honest about things. And we liked that. Immediately we were like, oh, this is like a Nathan Jones 0.20, but what he's saying, we believe, and we're on board with that. However, he's got himself into a bit of a pickle now, and that's a phrase I don't often use, himself into a pickle. But he has, because he's defending the players when they have been crap, and you want a manager that just... You feel like you just trust that knows what's going on. And then what we're watching on the pitch, if the manager says, no, I think we played well, and we've all watched what's happened, you do get a little bit lost. So I think he is going in that direction, and people are already questioning the fact he's not been promoted. We let so many goals in every club he's managed. So already he's on the kind of the chopping board, and the fact we had to pay him out of contract at Swansea. So I think a fair few fans are a bit like, hang on a minute, he's not the right man for the job. But I personally think, as I've heard many other people say, it's a bit like the Milk Tray Man. He's just so smooth. I love him.
He's only 37 as well. He's a young man.
Oh, he's a good-looking bloke.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at him and you...
Drooling, I am. Salivating.
Before this goes the wrong direction, let's get it back on track. Yeah. And
but all I was going to say was, when you see him, the milk tray man, you go, oh, there is a man that fills me with confidence, but it's just not translating to what we're seeing on the pitch at the moment. And I hope for him, because he seems like a top bloke, and hearing his life story and everything he's achieved so far, it's great. But no matter what, whether you like the manager or not, if the results aren't happening and we've spent so much money on players, it's just not working at the moment.
But he's lost Ward-Prowse. I mean, they've got money back in. You know, he lost Salisu. He went to France, didn't he?
Nathan Teller was fantastic for Burnley last year, and he's got bought out by Leverkusen. And then we kept Shea Adams. He doesn't seem to be able to score very easily. He'll 10 shots that you're like, oh, he should get those. He'll score the most difficult one, which is bonkers. We've managed to keep him, but yeah, it's whatever's happening at the moment, it's not working. Who do you blame? How do you fix the problem?
What do you think about Ward-Prowse the other week at West Ham when he scored and he did the hammers? You must have been thinking you've played for 3 games, Jonathan. Had he played at that point? West Ham?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm like about badge kissers and stuff like that. Kiss the badge 1 minute and leave the club the next.
Yeah.
I mean, he's endeared himself to West Ham fans that way. They love Ward-Prowse already in the same way that Southampton fans. I just think, you know, he might have just blurred his legacy a little bit, but that's not for me to say. Has it, Tom? Are you now looking at him and thinking, you're a rat?
You dirty rat. No, not at all. I chatted to Prowsey a few times, and to me, he'd always be a club legend in the same right. The amount of goals he scored, the free kicks. I wish he'd have scored, you know, becoming the top scoring free kick taker in the Premier League. I would have loved it to see him in a Saints shirt. At West Ham, like, yeah, he's moved there. That's his club now. That's their fans he's endearing himself to. I personally, there's no lines blurred, because he still wears his Southampton shin pads. And that's a little fact for you. He still wears his Southampton shin pads. We saw it on Instagram, and every Saints fan was like, that's right. His heart's still in the South Coast. I love him. He's doing well for West Ham. Fair play. I'm just annoyed about the fact we sold him for what would be, at the end of the season, is a very cheap fee for someone who's as good as Prowsey.
And you never know. You might regret, you know, I mean... Big Paul Onuachu, you know, he's scoring on his debut. He scored for Trabzonspor against Besiktas. So, that, you know, on his debut, that's his, obviously his first goal since January. And, you know, you never know, you might want him back, and you might bundle one in the far post in 6 or 7 years' time.
The one thing, I went to the West Ham away game last season, which as a Saints fan was awful, but I went with a couple of West Ham fans, so I was in enemy territory. And then Paul Onuachu came on, and these West Ham fans in front of me, by the way, can I just say, the West Ham fans were panicking when they didn't have the ball, and I said, actually, you're playing the game perfectly against Southampton, give us the ball in the Premier League, we won't know what to do with it. And these fans, when they saw tall Paul, they were like, freak, freak. They just started shouting out freak, which I thought was very amusing. I don't think anyone's feelings were hurt, but he's just such a tall bloke, but yet couldn't trap the ball with his feet. We didn't cross it to him. Yeah, brilliant. And that endeared me to West Ham fans. They've got that sense of humour that we love about football. Still, we lost, so it was a bad day for me.
And what's going to happen this season then? Because you started well again, and now you've had this dreadful run. So what are your genuine hopes?
Well, I'll tell you what my genuine hopes are, Terry and JP, is I started doing a podcast about Southampton FC last season, right? Other podcasts do exist, but and we got relegated, and then. The lead commentator for Southampton FC and BBC Radio Solent said, why don't we do a podcast together? And we've started doing that. And from a lack of judgment, I feel like I might be relegating us again. So at this rate, I think I'm going to have to stop doing a Southampton FC podcast. It's a real... Look, there was so much anticipation about us getting promoted quickly. And I think now we are in a fight to work out who we are, what is our identity, to maybe go up next year. Playoffs could happen, but we do not know who we are as a team. We don't know our best 11 at all.
Tom, I hate to worry you, there's precedent. Okay. I started my professional broadcasting career at BBC Radio Bristol. Bristol City, I was there, I was a Bristol City reporter, having been there for a while and worked with the club and my dad. When I started that job, they were in the First Division. Within 4 years of me being on the radio, they were 92nd in the Football League. There's precedent. Tom, give up the podcast. otherwise, you're going to be, you know, you're going to be down there in the mire.
I know.
And it'll be all your fault.
Yes.
Well, don't say it like that, Jamie.
All your fault, Tom.
The Football Friendly Podcast is the one and only podcast, and I just want everybody to know that. Others just don't cut the mustard. You're probably right. I should give up, but, you know, something, and this is the thing with football, I'll never lose that belief. I'll never lose that belief. I'll keep coming back for more, and that is what I'm going to do.
That's why they keep us on the gates, isn't it? That's why, you know, when they're even though your team's getting battered every week, they know that we're still going to rock up with our 25, well, more than that now, isn't it? You know, that's they know that. They've got us. They've got us with our loyalty.
Yeah. I just don't understand it when... Like, here's my biggest question for you two football fans. It's the fact that you spend all this money on players that you think, you believe, that are going to do the business. They're going to change the fortunes of the club. And then within a couple of years, you go, oh, they were rubbish. But I don't understand. These players are talented. Why is it not working? It's like looking at a puzzle and going, well, these pieces don't quite fit. That's what it is. Is it the manager? Is it the tactics? Is it the formation? And I know this is the number one question. Why does it work for some teams and doesn't for Southampton? Like, and that's what I can't work out. And I still go blindly to all the games and I go, I believe in this team. And then it's almost as if in the back of my head, I know that it's not going to work out. These players aren't good enough, you know?
I don't know what's happened to Southampton. They've got a good training ground. They, you know, they had a wonderful youth team system. Rupert Lowe, the chairman, much maligned, played a big part in that. In that youth team, creation of that youth team system, brought so many good players through, and as Terry alluded to earlier, half of them went off to Liverpool. But I cannot put my finger on. Once you go into that downward slide, and they've been there before, don't forget, you know, they slid down and down and down, and then Alan Pardew and Nigel Atkins brought them back up. But, you know, I do fear that this might happen again, and the whole setup of Premier League money is to be paid out to teams who come down, and the wages they've already been playing. I mean, look at the players Southampton have let go just to, you know, to balance the books this year. I do fear for them, Tom, I'm afraid to say.
Well, I was hoping to come on this podcast and leave with a bit of joy, but that's really killed it off. So thank you very much, guys.
Well, you have got Stoke the weekend, haven't you? And that's already a six-pointer. Because, I mean, they're 20th. I'm looking at the table here, and you're 15th. But it's only a matter of 3 points, that. Yeah. But having said that, you could leap all the way to as it stands there, in the right results, which is not going to happen, but 8th.
I mean, here's the thing. Going to the bottom of the table championship team, Middlesbrough, and losing and making them look good... It means we've got issues. I'll tell you what is a positive. I am a big fan when I go to the games. Always get a match day programme. They've gone old school there, which is quite nice. Which is very nice. And I think that's the best thing that we've had this season. So just, that's quite nice. So there is, you know, there's things to be, you know, positive about. Just not the ones I want.
No. I love the club and I really wish you well. And I've always enjoyed going there. And, you know, an hour and 15 from where I live. So it's one of the easiest for me to get to, and I've really have it. Apart from those speed cameras, you go down the hill to St Mary's, coming from my end, from Sussex end, and there's like speed cameras that are in your face. You go underneath a bridge, and all of a sudden there's a speed camera in your face, and they change the speed limit from, I think, 40 to 30, and bang, I get done every time I go there, doing 80.
Well, that's what we say. Hopefully we'll get... Hopefully we'll get Pierce. We'll get Jonathan Pierce this week. That's what the council are always about, that. You know, so and actually, thank you. We're not like Birmingham's council. We're not going bust because of those speed cameras. So maybe that's the secret.
Tom, it's great.
I've enjoyed it as well.
It's
thank you, Terry.
That good. That's how good you've been.
Do you make your living from words, Terry?
Yes, I do.
No.
I will say in Terry Alderson's, no, he doesn't need any defence. One of the reasons that I once had a comedy gig at the Boat Show, which is an actual boat in London, and I had to follow Terry Alderton. And he shouldn't have been on in the middle, but he had some other gig to go to. And this new upstart doing 10 minutes to hopefully get booked again had to follow what can only be described as an absolute tearing of the ceiling, absolutely tore the show just into pieces. People were like, what was that? The voices, the characters. Oh, my word. I've never seen comedy like it. And I came on, you know, when you get that mic feedback. Hello, hello. Tapping that. And I was like, hi. So... anyone noticed when you're in the supermarket and the people are like, this is awful. And I'll never forget that death that I had. No, but it made me want to be a better comic. And Terry has a very, very fond place in my heart. An amazing speaker of words, JP.
Thank you.
Just then was awful. But that was terrible.
Yeah, I've tripped on my fat lip. Tom Deacon, it has been absolutely splendid, wonderful for you to grace our presence on JP and T, the Football Friendly. We do have a Twitter account, or an X account now, which still got it. It's anyway, you got it, and that's JPNT Football at JPNT Football. Paul, the producer, is that right?
I can't remember.
It's on there. Just look up Jonathan Pearce, you'll find him. Again, Tom, thanks very much. Paul Daniels, producer. Jonathan Pearce, anything to say as we wrap the show up? Where are you this weekend commentating?
Doing a women's game on Sunday, Aston Villa Manchester United, doing a French game Sunday night, and on Saturday I am at Villa Brighton. So I'm going up to Villa. I'm going up to see my son on Friday night, and we'll probably be staggering down Broad Street sometime at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Look forward to that commentary. It'll probably be as bad as I was just now. See you soon, everyone.
Social Podcast Network.